Chapter 10. Tim stood in the alley next to the Piss Bucket Tavern. He had Butterbean's head nearly all the way inside Catherine's backpack.
"Are you sure you're doing that right?"
asked Julian.
"I don't know. I've never done this before."
"This is a waste of time," said Tony the Elf. "That's her animal companion, right? If you had any idea where she was, we wouldn't be able to hold him back from going after her."
"Do you have any better ideas?"
Tony the Elf shook his head. Tim turned to the gnome.
"What about you, Gorgonzola? Didn't Frank send you with us because you have the gather information skill? Why don't you go gather some information?"
"Well, what am I supposed to do?"
asked Gorgonzola.
"Ask random people on the street if they've seen that guy's sister? I need something to work with. How's she holding up?"
Tim unrolled Catherine's character sheet.
"She's still at full hit points. Wherever she is, she must be okay."
"Has anything on the sheet changed?"
"No,"
said Tim impatiently.
"Her hit points are the same. Her experience points are the same. We've got all her shit with us, so her inventory is... Hang on a second. What's this?"
Julian, Tony the Elf, and Gorgonzola crowded around Tim. The space on the back of the character sheet reserved for inventory was blank, except for one entry that said, "Giant Pumpkin."
"That's strange," said Julian. "I was pretty drunk last night, but I think I'd remember if Catherine was walking around with a giant pumpkin. This must be something she's acquired since she went missing."
Gorgonzola smiled.
"That's something I can work with. Give me a few minutes."
He scurried out of the alley and into the crowded market.
"How's this going to help?" asked Julian.
"You'd be surprised what Gorgonzola can do with a tiny scrap of information," said Tony the Elf. "Anyone can ask questions. You don't take 6 ranks in the gather information skill just to be able to ask questions. He can take seemingly innocuous bits of random data and make connections and assessments that you or I wouldn't even think of."
"Like a detective?" asked Julian.
"Yeah," said Tony the Elf. "But more than that, he's like Sherlock Holmes, Dr. House, and Rain Man combined."
"That's pretty cool."
Tim put his hand on his thigh and felt nothing. The instinct to grab his cell phone and check the time was still strong with him. Frustrated, he crossed his arms and leaned against the wall.
"We'll see how cool it is when he..."
"Hey, guys!"
shouted Gorgonzola, scampering out of the crowded street.
"What did you find out?"
asked Tony the Elf. Gorgonzola took a minute to catch his breath before speaking.
"Elmore the Butcher's wife caught a case of the clap from Harry the Tanner's eldest son. 3 of Rostand the Baker's 7 children have conspicuously blue eyes and blonde hair, much like Stanford P. Ames, the smithy, who was found dead in his kitchen with 47 stab wounds in his back. Police call it a suicide, but there are rumors. Stanley the Mason has 5 testicles, and 3 of them are..."
"Did you find out anything about my sister?" Tim asked.
"Oh, yeah,"
said Gorgonzola.
"Sorry."
He pulled a scrap of paper out from under his vest.
"I've got an address."
Tim wrapped an arm around Butterbean's neck and gave him a squeeze.
"Unfucking believable."
"It's a bit of a hike,"
said Gorgonzola.
"On the other side of town, in the Garden District."
Tony the Elf raised his eyebrows and nodded.
"Posh."
"What's that?"
asked Tim.
"We're headed to a very rich neighborhood. Looks like your sister might have snagged herself a sugar daddy."
Flashes of purple ran through Tim's hazy memory of the previous night.
"I think I remember something like that," said Tim. "I think she was getting chatted up at the bar by some fancy-pants-looking guy. Do you remember, Julian?"
"I was asleep."
"What an inconsiderate bitch,"
said Tim.
"It's just like her to go running off with some guy, not giving a shit that people might worry about her."
"Hold off before making any judgments,"
said Gorgonzola.
"All I've got here is the address of a gardening enthusiast who grows giant pumpkins as a hobby. It's a lead we can work with, but it's no guarantee she's there."
Tony the Elf took the lead, weaving through the crowded city streets at a demanding pace. Tim was self-conscious at first, wanting to keep as low a profile as possible for a group consisting of 2 elves, a gnome, a halfling, a raven, a sheepdog, and a wolf. The more he took in his surroundings, the less self-conscious he became. No one could complain of Cardinia's lack of cultural diversity. A creature with tentacles growing out of its face bumped shoulders with a satyr, drawing not so much as a curious glance from either of them. A lizard man argued with a bugbear over the price of flour, and no one looked twice at them. The only reaction the crowd gave to anything was to part for a procession of 4 human soldiers dragging a manacled, 2-headed giant behind them. The prisoner had to be at least 13 feet tall. Its two heads growled and snarled at the crowd, who seemed less frightened of the beast and more put off by its smell. Its whole body was covered in a thick, crusty layer of mud and shit. It made Cooper seem fit to perform surgery by comparison. As the soldiers dragged the prisoner by Tim's group, the smell wafted over to Tim like a sewage truck had just spilled its load. One head met Tim's gaze. It turned to the other head, and they both looked at him together. They said in unison. Tim yelped and jumped back. The giant's two heads had a good laugh about that. So did two of the soldiers.
That there's what you call an ettin,
said a tiny green humanoid hovering above Tim's head. It flapped its leathery wings and offered Tim an uncomfortably friendly grin before continuing.
If you'd like to get a new jacket made, I happen to know the best tailor in all of Cardinia. His prices are most reasonable.
A crust of bread bounced off the creature's face.
Fuck off, demon, said Tony the Elf. He's not interested.
The demon hissed at Tony the Elf and flew off with the bread.
Will you stop gawking like such a goddamn tourist?
Tony the Elf said to Tim.
But I...
Low profile, remember?
The crowds thinned out as they moved away from the city proper. The only other time there was a notable increase in the density of people was when Tony led them through the gate of a 10-foot-high stone wall. Bored guards leaned on their spears, not even bothering to look at who entered or left the city.
Shouldn't they be scrutinizing people a bit more?
Julian asked Tony the Elf once they had shouldered their way past a group of hobgoblins.
I mean, check people's papers or something?
The kingdom has been at peace for over 150 years, said Tony the Elf. Cardinia is not only the capital, but it's a major trading hub. People are free to come and go as they please, so long as they don't cause trouble.
Why are we leaving? Asked Tim. Didn't you say this pumpkin guy was in a posh part of the city?
The borders of Cardinia extend beyond the city walls, said Gorgonzola, all the way to the Blue Run River. For enough money, you can have the prestige of being able to call yourself Cardinian, but not have to deal with the smells and noise and whatnot.
They crossed over a meadow until they came to a little country path. Judging by the number of dandelions growing out of it, Tim guessed that this was not a well-traveled road. On the side they had come from, there was nothing but meadow all the way to the city wall. On the other side, however, was a virtual wall of vegetation. Trees, hedgerows, vine-covered brick walls. It occurred to Tim that they were walking past pieces of private property.
This is it,
said Gorgonzola, stopping in front of a 4-foot-tall hedgerow and tucking the scrap of paper into his vest. The hedgerow was interrupted in the middle by a white lattice archway grown over tastefully with flowering vines. The scents of roses and honeysuckle were intoxicating. Beyond the archway was a meticulously kept lawn and a charming little country cottage.
This place is lovely, said Tim. I almost can't blame her for wanting to stay here.
Butterbean must have thought differently. He sniffed the air and started to growl. It was low and menacing.
Take it easy, boy,
said Tim, rubbing down the fur that had begun to stand up on the back of Butterbean's neck.
Everything is okay,
Butterbean barked.
Can you calm that wolf down,
said Gorgonzola.
We're not going to be very welcome here with an angry wolf.
Butterbean,
Tim snapped.
Shut up.
He got on one knee to be face to face with the wolf and stroked its fur.
We're here to find Catherine.
Butterbean whimpered and lowered his head. Tim walked through the archway, taking in a greedy breath of the fresh air. It was like walking into a fabric softener commercial. The others followed. The lawn was dotted here and there with large elm trees and abstract topiaries. A gardener was clipping away at the hedge closest to Tim.
Excuse me,
said Tim. The gardener turned around. His face was rotten. The skin above his upper lip was torn and hanging off of his face. His hands were little more than bones with dry, rotted gloves of former skin. The one remaining eye in its head was huge and round due to the lid having rotted away. It stared down at Tim, hedge clippers in hand.
Jesus!
Shouted Tim, backing up into Tony the Elf. Butterbean jumped forward and ripped one of the thing's arms right off.
Magic missile!
Said Julian, thrusting his hands forward. A sparkling bolt of light shot out of his hands and hit the creature square in the chest. It reeled backwards. Before anyone else could make a move, a shaft of wood sprouted out of the tree Julian was standing next to, right above his head. Everyone froze except for Butterbean,
who continued to tear at the arm he had taken.
"The hell you think you're doing to my gardener?"
Everyone turned their heads to the porch. Tim kept one wary eye on the gardener. An aged man stood with the assistance of a cane. In his other hand, he held a large crossbow.
"Butterbean," Tim said sharply, "put that down. Get over here."
Butterbean let go of the arm and lay on the grass next to Tim, but continued growling at the zombie.
"The gods damn you all,"
shouted the man as he hobbled down the steps toward them.
"Do you know how hard it is to find a zombie that can trim hedges? I only just got that one last night."
The zombie attempted to continue working, but with only one arm, it was effectively just beating the hedge with the clippers. The old man sighed.
"Ha! He's useless now. Go on, you. Get out back and start digging a hole."
The zombie started walking toward the backyard.
"Put down your clippers and pick up your arm, you stupid son of a bitch."
Butterbean stood up and barked as it walked off.
"Butterbean, hush," said Tim.
"The hell's wrong with your dog?"
"I don't know. I guess maybe he doesn't like zombies."
"Well, you mind it don't go bothering no more of the help. They don't come cheap."
"You have more?"
Tim looked around and spotted two more zombies on the vast green lawn. One was raking leaves and the other was pouring water from a can along the base of the hedgerow.
"Just what sort of business compelled you fellas to interrupt the tranquility of my afternoon?"
"Julian, could you talk to him? You've got better charisma than me."
The old man furrowed his brow.
"It's big of you to recognize your shortcomings, son. But what a queer thing to say."
"We're, said Tim. "We're just friends."
"We heard you like to grow pumpkins," said Julian. The old man's face lit up.
"You heard right, boy. Come on round back and have a look."
He started off in the direction the zombie had gone. Tim, Tony the Elf, and Gorgonzola looked at Julian.
"Diplomacy," said Julian.
The others nodded and followed the old man.
"The name's Simon Peppercorn,"
said the old man as he hobbled along.
"You have a lovely home, Mr. Peppercorn," said Julian.
"Please, folks around here call me Pep."
"I'm Julian. These are my friends, Tim, Tony the Elf, and Gorgonzola."
"Well, that's nice," said Pep, without turning around to see any of them.
Around the side of the house, they passed another zombie. This one was picking red berries from the hedge and putting them into a wicker basket. Tim held his arm firmly around Butterbean's neck as they walked, but the wolf didn't even seem to notice the zombie. Nearing the back of the house, Tim could make out giant orange spheres in a sea of tangled vines. Beyond the vast pumpkin patch, the land was forested with pines. Birds chirped noisily in the trees, and Tim heard the trickle of a stream somewhere off in the distance. He could see himself retiring in a place like this, settling down with a couple of acres on Bay St. Louis. He'd have to sell a lot of chicken, but it didn't hurt to dream. Tim's daydream was broken by a howl in the woods, followed by an explosion of black birds fleeing the trees.
"Ah, hell," said Pep.
He hobbled hurriedly up the steps of a large wooden deck attached to the back of the house. It had a set of patio furniture made of unfinished wood. He set his crossbow on the table and produced a larger one from a massive wooden chest. This one could almost be considered a siege weapon, and it even had a scope.
"What is it?"
asked Gorgonzola as he scrambled up the steps.
"What's going on?"
Pep cranked the winch on his giant crossbow and inserted a silver-tipped bolt as long as Tim's arm.
"Werewolves," he said with a wicked grin on his face.
"Oh, crap," said Tony the Elf. "Are you serious?"
"Yeah," said Pep. "The stupid sons of bitches keep trying to make off with my pumpkins."
He pushed the smaller crossbow out of the way and stabilized the big one on the table. He licked his lips and closed one eye as he peered through the scope with the other.
"What do werewolves want with pumpkins?" asked Julian.
"Maybe they like pumpkins,"
Tony the Elf said a little too curtly. Everyone looked at him. Even Pep spared him a glance before returning his gaze to his scope.
"Who knows why folks do what they do?"
Pep scanned the pumpkin patch from one forested side to the other.
"There's one!"
Tim looked up. Sure enough, a hairy lupine figure was running across the clearing at breakneck speed. It didn't lope and bound like he'd imagined a werewolf would. It looked more like it was just some scared hairy dude. The trigger clicked, and the bow made a mechanical thwack.
The bolt just missed its target and pierced through a pumpkin instead. The werewolf made no move to steal a pumpkin. It just kept running until it reached the safety of the forest on the other side of the patch.
"Damn," said Pep, already cranking the winch again.
Then his eyes brightened as he looked into his backyard. He cranked faster.
"There's another one! Big fella this time!"
The second werewolf was indeed bigger than the first one, and he ran more like an animal than a man. Still, its gait was oddly familiar. It stopped and ripped open the pumpkin that had been shot with the crossbow. Pep lined up his shot. Thwack!
"Fuck!"
shouted the werewolf, plucking the bolt out of its ass.
"Hey!" said Tim. "That was Coop!"
Tony the elf slapped him in the back of the head.
"Ow!"
said Tim.
"I wish people would stop doing that."
He glared up at Tony the elf, who glared right back with a shut the fuck up look on his face. Tim picked up the hint and looked over at Pep. Pep wasn't paying any attention to either of them. He already had a third bolt loaded.
"This one's nice and stupid," he said.
The big werewolf was still standing there with a bolt in his hand and a hole in his ass when another bolt hit him in the small of the back.
"God damn it!"
it shouted, bending over backwards and plucking out the bolt.
"Coop!"
shouted another familiar voice from the wooded area where the big werewolf had come from.
"Get your stupid ass over here now!"
Pep started turning the crank on his winch again.
"If I could take this big fella down, he'll make a good wood chopper."
"Do you really think it's right, what you're doing?"
asked Tim. His voice was shaky. Pep laughed as he loaded the next silver-tipped bolt.
"Why, you're a soft little guy, aren't you? Lycanthropy is a disease. Believe me, the man inside that body would rather be dead than be the beast it's become."
Tim's mind raced as he tried to think of a way to stop this guy from shooting Cooper again without actually giving Cooper's identity away.
"Do you mind if I give it a try?" asked Julian.
"Why, sure, young fella," said Pep.
He handed the crossbow to Julian.
"Have you used one of these before?"
"Oh, yeah," said Julian. I use them all the time."
It was brilliant. Julian had already demonstrated his lack of proficiency with a crossbow. He'd at least buy Cooper a few seconds to gather his wits and move. He leveled the crossbow and peered into the scope.
"Don't rush yourself," said Pep. "You've got all the time in the..."
Thwack!
"Yow!"
howled Cooper, a fresh bolt poking out of his back.
"Shit!" said Julian.
"Dude!" said Tim. "What the fuck, man?"
"Well done, my boy,"
said Pep, retrieving the weapon from a stunned and silent Julian.
"Now, shut up a spell while I put this big bastard out of his misery."
He flicked his hand at Tim.
"I don't think..."
Tim started to say, but the words weren't coming out of his mouth. Also, he was deaf. He looked around. Tony the elf was digging in his ear with his finger. Gorgonzola was slapping the side of his head. Julian was opening his mouth widely over and over again, presumably trying to make a noise. He turned back just in time to see Pep pull the trigger on the crossbow. Tim looked towards Cooper and caught sight of the smaller werewolf. It moved so fast, it barely registered as more than a brown flash as it zipped out of the woods, snatched the flying bolt out of the air, and disappeared into the woods that it had originally come from. Cooper stumbled back toward the safety of the forest behind the other one. The sound of Pep's snapping fingers brought sound rushing back into Tim's ears.
"Blah, blah, 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 blah,"
Julian shouted, until everyone turned around to look at him. He shut up.
"Did you boys see that?"
asked Pep, still peering out at the werewolf-free pumpkin patch.
"Ain't never seen one run that fast before."
"Yeah,"
Tim said with a relieved sigh.
"That was remarkable."
"Well," said Pep, "I suppose that wraps up today's excitement."
He placed his giant crossbow carefully in its case, lowered the lid, and buckled it shut. He turned to face his guests with a broad smile.
"Now, how would you boys like..." "Well, I'll be goddamned."
He was looking past them, out into the pumpkin patch. The smaller werewolf popped out from behind the cover of the trees, jumped onto an impressively large pumpkin, and used it to spring himself into a somersault.
"That little one's got some spunk in him," said Pep. "I'll give him that."
He frantically went to work reopening his crossbow case as the werewolf landed flawlessly on his feet and did a series of cartwheels toward the other side of the pumpkin patch.
"The trick,"
said Pep, squinting into the scope, is to give him the proper amount of lead. He moved the crossbow slowly ahead of the werewolf's position. And wait for the perfect shot, and then, thwack! The bolt caught the werewolf right in the neck. He went down mid-cartwheel, disappearing into the sea of pumpkin vines. Tony the elf gasped. Whoever the guy in the other wolf suit was did not stand up.
Ha! Said Pep. That one could be a kill. Let's see what his friend has to say about it.
He hurriedly loaded another bolt and aimed the bow right where he expected Cooper to exit the woods. A moment of tense silence passed, but Cooper did not disappoint. He poked his wolf-masked head out from behind a tree, and Pep immediately fired. It hit the tree.
Damn, said Pep. Too rushed.
Cooper bolted out into the open, waving his arms like he was trying to ward off a swarm of mosquitoes as he ran. That only slowed him down and made a bigger target. Pep hit him twice, once in the chest and once in a flailing arm, before he reached his partner in crime.
Knock it off, fuckwad!
Shouted Cooper, bending over to pick up whoever that other guy was. On his way back to cover, Cooper held the limp body he carried in front of him, but the one last shot Pep was able to get off found its way to Cooper.
Ow!
Said Cooper.
That's my fucking ear, you sick bastard!
He yanked the one bolt out of the tree before taking cover again. Pep kept his bow ready, aimed just to the left of their cover, but nothing emerged. He frowned and lowered his weapon.
I guess they done learned their lesson for today. I bet you anything, though. Those stupid sons of bitches will be out there again tomorrow.
He placed the giant crossbow back in its box.
Can I offer you fellas a drink? Lemonade? Something stronger?
I don't know, said Tim.
He stared out beyond the pumpkin patch, desperately looking for some sign that the guy who had been shot in the neck was okay.
Maybe we should...
Lemonade would be lovely, said Tony the elf.
You fellas just sit back and take in the fresh air, said Pep. I'll be right back.
He hobbled through his back door. Tony the elf waited until the sounds of clinking glasses could be heard in the kitchen. He cupped his hands over the sides of his mouth and made a bird call. Two chirps and a high-pitched whistle. There was no response.
Shit. What's wrong? Asked Julian. What's wrong with you?
Tony the elf snapped back at him.
What the hell was that business with the crossbow? I was just trying to buy him some time. Then why did you shoot him?
Julian looked down.
I didn't mean to. You took aim at him and pulled the trigger.
Tony the elf was doing his best to keep his voice below a scream.
I must have rolled a 20, said Julian. I'm not even proficient with a crossbow. What are you talking about? Everyone is proficient with a crossbow. It's a simple weapon, for crying out loud. The only time I ever tried to use one, it butted me in the face.
Tony the elf rolled his eyes, and Tim suddenly realized what he was about to say just before he said it.
You're thinking about this all backwards. You didn't roll a 20 this time, thank Christ. You rolled a 1 last time. So you're saying I'm proficient with a crossbow?
Asked Julian.
Course you are, dumbass. That would have been nice to know earlier, said Julian. I don't have as many hit points as the rest of you guys.
Tony the elf shook his head as he cupped his hands over his mouth to try his bird call again. Two chirps and a whistle. This time the call was answered by a long coo and a yup yup. Tony the elf breathed a sigh of relief. Tim and Julian followed suit.
What the hell kind of bird makes that kind of call?
Tim joked. Tony the elf smiled at him.
I don't know, said Pep. I hear it every now and again. I wish I could find it so as I could shoot it.
He set a tray down on the table. It had a clay jug and 5 small glasses.
Now let's get down to business. I presume your visit here today had purpose beyond destroying one of my gardeners.
We're looking for a girl, said Tim.
I don't know what you've been told about me, but I trade in pumpkins.
Why pumpkins? Asked Julian.
Tim didn't know whether Julian was sincerely interested in this crazy old man's hobbies or whether this was some kind of diplomacy tactic. Reluctantly, he kept his mouth shut. Pep shrugged.
I like pumpkins.
That doesn't seem very evil of you, said Julian.
That was maybe one of the least diplomatic sentences that Tim had ever heard.
What the hell are you?
I'm sorry, said Julian. I just have to know. My understanding of the rules is that only evil clerics can make and control zombies.
You got some gall, son, said the old man. You trespass on my property, destroy one of my gardeners, and then you have the nerve to sit there and judge me while you sip my lemonade.
You misinterpret my meaning, said Julian, who didn't look at all worried about having just insulted a homicidal priest whose hobbies include murder for sport. It's just the opposite, really. You have been a gracious and hospitable host, and I was second-guessing my own preconceptions of good and evil.
Is that so? Said Pep.
He stared ponderously at Julian. What is it about pumpkins that you like?
They grow quickly, said Pep.
His time-worn eyes sparkled with the fervor of someone who is talking about something they are truly passionate about.
The vines are strong and determined. They'll climb up fences or trees, strangle the life out of anything weaker. You got pumpkins growing in your garden, you can forget about tomatoes and asparagus. The pumpkins will take over everything.
Well, I guess that's pretty evil.
It's my sister, Tim interrupted. The girl we're looking for, that is. We have it on good authority that she has recently acquired a large pumpkin.
I was just getting around to that, said Julian.
How recently? Asked Pep. Does your good authority claim she has acquired this pumpkin?
Sometime last night, said Tim.
Pep sat back in his chair and stroked the white stubble on his chin.
It's not proper business etiquette to give away personal information about my customers, he said. But in Millard's case, I could make an exception. The poor guy gets lonely up there in that old fort of his. He'd welcome the company.
Millard?
Now mind you, Pep said abruptly, if I was you, I wouldn't go around asking questions about good and evil and all that.
He wagged a bony finger at Julian.
Curiosity is a good thing, I tell you, but that's just bad form, it is.
I apologize, said Julian. It was not my intent to offend you.
No harm done here, my boy, said Pep, smiling.
His smile faded before he spoke again. He leaned forward in his chair.
But Millard now, he's a different sort than me. He's sensitive like. His feelings are fragile. So if you want to go talk to him, you mind your manners and watch what you say, hear?
Of course, said Julian. Where might we find this man, Millard?
Oh, finding him won't be no trouble, said Pep. You know that mountain on the other side of town?
The dark and creepy one that casts a shadow over half of Cardinia?
Asked Tim.
That's the one, said Pep. Grimblood Peak.
Sounds inviting, said Tim.
You just shimmy your asses up to the top of that mountain, and you'll find an old fortification. Been here since the walls of the Fractured Kingdom. Fallen into some disrepair since then it has, but you won't have no trouble finding it.